from WCPB Channel 5 podcasts and SportsCenter 5. It's Take 5 with Chris Gasper.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Take 5 podcast. Today's guest, the face of NESN, Tom Caron. Now, Tom was an early adopter of these Red Sox. He tells you why he believed this season would be as successful as it has been so far. Also, Tom tells us which Red Sox player reminds him of Patrice Bergeron, the gentleman of the Boston Bruins. Also, we talk about Jarren Duran. He's the top prospect for the Red Sox. We've already seen the Tampa Bay Rays bring up their top prospect in Wander Franco and the impact he can have. What kind of impact can Duran have on this Red Sox season? And speaking of additions, what will Chaim Bloom do with the trade deadline? It's creeping up. It's July 30th. Will he be aggressive? I'm not sure Bloom thought this Red Sox team would be as good as it's been. So will he be able to protect his farm system and improve this team at the same time? Tom tells us about that. And also, Commissioner Caron checks in. He gives us his modest proposal to improve baseball and how to pick up the pace of play. And he had a couple of proposals that one Ellen Fleming liked in particular.
Yeah, we got into, obviously, the sticky substance of it all. I'm from the point of view, like, they've been doing it for so long. Why not just allow these people to use the sticky substance? Yeah. Everyone's doing it. I know that's, like, maybe the teenager
inside really
me. Everyone's doing it. So, like, why not? Why can't I?
But, why can't I use spider tack?
Yeah. So, I mean, he actually did a really good job explaining, like, what spider tack really does, where I guess, that makes sense why people shouldn't be able to use it. He made a really good point about just regulating some sort of sticky substance so people can at least hold on to the ball. And he also brought up how Papelbon just openly said on NESN, if I can cheat and get away with it, I'm going to do it.
Everybody's looking for an edge.
You need to get to the top somehow, right? Yeah. And like, you just have these increased pressures on you at all time. And like, we've all been there, right? Like, if you can cut a line, are you going to cut a line if you're in a rush?
Well, it's like, maybe. Like, if you go to a bar or club and you happen to know somebody at the front door, like, I can tell you there was a bar in Boston that I was at with some friends a few weeks ago, and I went to the back of the line and we happened to get recognized and we cut the entire line and walked right in. I didn't turn it down.
Oh, well, like, is that even cheating?
I feel like it is a little.
I feel like if you're the authority figure is giving you permission, it's not cheating. Oh, okay. I'm thinking like you're pushing people out of the way because you're getting a seat on the red line the last trip home to Braintree.
Wow. Okay. I didn't realize that Ellen Fleming was this cutthroat. I do want to ask you in this sticky substances discussion, one of the issues for the pitchers is they've used in the past sunscreen as something to help them grip. And now they're saying you can't use sunscreen. So I'm just questioning you in terms of, imagine if sunscreen weren't available, how would that affect your life?
It would affect my life very deeply. I understand this is a podcast, so you can't see my face, but well, right now I have fake tanner on, but if I didn't have sunscreen, I would die.
Would you melt like in Wizard of Oz? Like,
no, it would be like in that SpongeBob episode when he went without water.
Like, oh my God.
That's what would happen. So how do you regulate something like that? You have a pale guy on the pigeon mound. You need sunscreen on your neck.
Yes.
What do you do with that?
I guess, I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe you can put some of it on, but not too much. But, you know, if they find it like on you, then they're going to take you out of the game. You're out of the game and you get suspended 10 days. So again, I just don't think this rule is very well thought out. And I think Tom has some very good points about it and how it can be improved. So you're going to want to listen to that and Tom Caron's take on the Red Sox. He's next.
Hey, Boston, let's talk sports. WCVB Sports Center 5, The Contact.
Source at MLB tells me.
Expert analysis.
That's going to be a major point of contention.
On air.
I talked to a high-ranking source.
And exclusive articles free on the WCVB app. Duke Castiglione, Chris Gasper, Bob Halloran, and special correspondent Mike
Once
Lynch.
Again,
the strongest team covering Boston's teams.
The only game in town.
WCVB Sports Center 5 on Boston's news leader.
All right, now as promised, we're joined by the one, the only Tom Caron from NESN. TC, thanks for joining us today on the Take 5 podcast.
Chris, thanks for having me.
It's a real pleasure. So I want to credit you for this. I feel like, you know, in technology, there are early adopters, somebody who adopts technology before it really becomes popular. I feel like you were an early adopter of these 2021 Red Sox. You were telling us for a while, like, this team's going to be better than you think. You want to pay attention to this team. What was it about this team that you saw either in the offseason or spring training that led you to believe that they could have the type of season they're having?
Well, first of all, thank you. And on, you know, my two sons would laugh out loud if they ever thought it was being called the early adopter of anything. Okay, so
come on, you have the AirPods. You're cool. I see the AirPods.
There you go. You know what it was, Chris? Is I saw this group come together at spring training, and in full disclosure, they're better than I thought. Okay, so I thought they would be good. I thought they would be playoff caliber. I didn't think they'd be in first place as we, you know, close in on the All-Star break. But I did see a group that had veteran experience and playoff experience, right? Kike Hernandez won a World Series last year. Marwin Gonzalez won a World Series a couple of years ago. Hunter Renfro was in the World Series last year. Garrett Richards and Matt Andrees have been there and done that. And so I don't want to drop a 2013 on them because I'm not predicting they will win the World Series. But you know, I remember the winter after 2012 into 2013, and everyone was underwhelmed by the Shane Victorino signing and by the Johnny Gomes signing and by the Ryan Dempster signing, right? These guys were
Steven
at
Drew.
The end of their career. Steven Drew, right. Yeah. They were at the end of their career. They were nothing special. But as a group, they infused a completely different mindset in the clubhouse. And that's what I saw at spring training. I wasn't there. I was zooming in with these guys every day, but I did a lot of one-on-one stuff with them. And I picked up the vibe early that what they needed more than anything after last year was a reboot. And they got it two ways, by bringing in a bunch of veterans and by bringing back Alex Cora.
Yeah. And that was the next thing I wanted to ask you about. How much credit for this does Alex Cora get? Because I see a guy like Rafael Devers, who, as we're doing this podcast, is tied for the major league lead in RBI, had the go-ahead double, two-run double, and probably the most exhilarating win of the season on Tuesday night, a 9-5 victory at the Trop over the Tampa Bay Rays in a showdown of the first and second place teams in the AL East. And Devers, to me, just looks like a totally different guy with Alex Cora as his manager.
Yeah, when they brought back Alex as manager at the end of last year, I posted something somewhere that said, you know, they brought back the Raffy Whisperer, and you know, and he actually texted me and said, that's not fair. Okay, I don't, you know, he's a good player. It's not because of me, but I do think two guys in particular, I think Alex Cora has a very tangible effect on. It's Rafael Devers and JD Martinez, and they both had, you know, woeful years last year. JD at the plate, and Rafi really took a step back defensively last year, and that's still an ongoing issue. Had an error in the first inning last night, but I think what Cora does is gets these guys across the board, those two guys in particular, to believe in themselves. I think Devers moves past an error quicker under Alex Cora than he does under Ron Renicki or anybody else. I think Cora's got a way. You know, we all hear it all the time, right? The number one thing about Alex Cora is communication, his transparency, his ability to connect and relate with the players. I think he does that really well with Devers. And with JD, you know, after a completely lost year where he was just a mess last year, and you know, we were all saying it's because he doesn't have the video, and that almost made it worse, because now you're basically saying, you know, one of the greatest hitters of the last 5 years is kind of a gimmick guy, right? He's just created himself a video. He's really not that good a hitter. He's just better at video than everybody else. And that's not fair to him, because you can look at all the video you want, but you still got to go up there and face about, you know, 100-mile-an-hour fastball and a slider breaking away. And so I think Cora comes in, and he's one of the most confident people I've ever met. And he's got a way to sort of pass that confidence on. And I think this team needed that. It had been knocked down in the schoolyard fight of 2020 and in the pandemic, and the world shut down. They were left as forgotten and left on the floor. And Alex Cora was the right guy to sort of pick them up and dust them off and at least give them a fighting chance to get out there and play to their ability. And he's done that.
Yeah. Do you have any, you sort of mentioned the confidence of Alex Cora, and I think you're right. He really does imbue that in his team. But do you have any stories about sort of that confidence or anything a player's told you or just being around the team? I know it's a little different, obviously, in the pandemic era, but just an example of Alex's easy everyday confidence.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, and what I think more than anything as manager, and I knew him as a player,
yeah,
and we could speak to that, you know what I mean? He was basically a utility player who put together a hell of a career.
He did.
Because, you know, he could come off the bench, he could play April while Dustin Pedroia was struggling as a rookie and hit over 300 and still mentor Pedroia, because he was confident enough to not worry that Pedroia was going to end his career by taking his job. In baseball, you know, it's not the NBA where confidence is thumping your chest,
yes.
right? It's confidence in baseball is believing that after you go on a 2-for-20 stretch, that you're going to still turn it around and play to the back of your baseball card. And that's the baseball confidence Alex Cora has. But as a manager, he gets his players to believe that he has their best interest in mind while still navigating what's best for the team. And I always use the example of Brock Holt in the 2018 ALCS against the New York Yankees, becomes the first player in major league history to hit for the cycle in a playoff game. He's not in the starting lineup the next day. And I remember being on the postgame show after that playoff game, and I'm with Jim Rice, and I remember who else was with us. But I remember saying, listen, I know tomorrow's matchup isn't great, but there's no way you can bench the guy who just hit the first cycle in major league playoff history. And Alex Cora did. And Brock Holt was okay with it because he understood the greater good. And I'm not sure that really answers the question.
No, it does. No, that was great. That's a great example.
Yeah, I do think that Alex Cora has a way to get these guys to be confident in their role, even if tonight I might not be in the lineup, or you might pull me out of this game and I want to stay in this game. You know, he's pulled a couple pitchers out at 4 2/3 innings in the last couple weeks. It means they're one out away from qualifying for the win. And that's a statement. And a lot of managers do that, and you got a problem behind closed doors in the clubhouse. I know for a fact they don't, because they really do buy into it. And he's very good at explaining why he's doing it.
That's a great point you make, TC. I want to go back to something you said about the team last year, and it was a weird year, 60-game season, COVID, no fans in the stands. Obviously, the Red Sox finished in last place. They only won 24 games. But what have you seen this year in terms of fan engagement with the team, you know, on Nesson, the interest level? Because I thought the thing that condemned last year's team the most, it wasn't that people were angry or upset about the performance. It's that they were apathetic. They just kind of didn't care.
Yeah, well, it's hard to care when you're down 5-0 in the first inning every night. I mean, listen, it was the highest ERA in Boston Red Sox history.
Yeah.
And they've been playing baseball for more than 100 years. So you're talking about the worst pitching staff ever assembled by the Boston Red Sox. And you know, it was the starting pitching more often than not. You know, you asked at the beginning why I bought into this team early, and I'm trying to make sure I got the names right. But last year, and I was quizzing everybody, I got Jerry Remy on this. He didn't remember who the 3, 4, and 5 starters were when they started the season last year. And in no particular order, I don't remember who was 2, 3, 4, 5, but it was Ryan Weber, Matt Hall, and Josh Osich. Josh Osich is where I get everybody. Okay. Nobody remembers that he started game 5. And he was an opener. But the point is, you went from that to essentially Eduardo Rodriguez, who wasn't here last year, Garrett Richards, who's had himself a career, and Nick Pivetta. I mean, that alone is a massive upgrade. So you've got starting pitching now that, again, we've seen them struggle in the first inning for some reason still. But last year, I don't know if apathetic is the right word, but you're right. There was almost a sort of here we go again. I remember Xander Bogaerts, who's the quietest, most classy baseball player I've dealt with in a long time. You know, he's Patrice Bergeron without skates.
Love it.
And he, you know, last year at one point in the postgame, we were on the air and we go to his interview. And, you know, he says, well, you know, with pitching like this, it's hard to compete. And for him to say that speaks volumes. And I'm not sure those were the exact words.
No, I remember him saying that. Yeah, and you're pretty close. You are characterizing it correctly. And it wasn't a dig at his teammates. It was just a statement of fact.
Right. And for him to say that, you're like, all right, so this is real. So I, you know, last year's team wasn't unlikable. They were just, and maybe that's worse, right? What's the old cliche? The opposite of love isn't hate. It's apathy.
Exactly.
Right? We were apathetic last year. I mean, we didn't hate this team. We didn't love this team. We didn't care about the team.
Yeah.
And I, you know, Alex Verdugo was their MVP last year.
He was.
And we come into this year and, you know, most fans are like, who's this Verdugo guy? You know, when do we get him? You know, and so it's a fresh start, and it's a likable team this year. That is one thing, and you know, not because they go for the laundry cart ride, and not because they're likable on the field. And last night was a crazy game.
It was a great game,
and most teams lose that game. You know, most teams.
I agree.
They went 4 1/3 innings without a base runner in the middle of all that, right? And they, you know, obviously the guy's on second base and all of that in extra innings.
Yeah.
There's some weird plays. So that's an easy game to lose, and nobody cares if you lose. Like, nobody's jumping off any bandwagon today because you lose that game. You just lost to it. But instead, they found a way to win. Yeah. I think that speaks a lot to who they are.
I completely agree with you on that. I do want to talk a little bit about the pitching, because you're right. And when I think about last year's team, I think we got one of the great.
And quotes. You don't, by the way, okay?
You don't think about
last
year's team. Well, I do for this reason, because Uncle Ron Renneke, who had a very tough job, I think gave one of the great quotes in Red Sox history when he was asked about Ryan Weber. He said, "Who do we have that's better than Ryan Weber?" That's up there with Lou Gorman's "What would we do with Willie McGee?" It is one of the great quotes in Red Sox history, and it typified their starting pitching last year. Obviously, the starting pitching this year is a lot better. They're 19th in starters ERA at 4.59, but there is a little bit of a red flag here, TC, which is since Memorial Day, they're 26th out of 30 teams at 5.97. And now we have Eduardo Rodriguez, who I thought was solid, really solid Tuesday night against the Rays. You know, the big mistake was the three-run homer in the fifth to Wander Franco. But the facts remain, he's winless since May 7. He is now winless in his last eight starts, and his ERA in that span is 7.94. Do you have some concerns about this starting pitching? And are we to the point where we need some reinforcements to arrive?
Yeah. Yes, and yes. And I think if you go a more narrow slice, I assume it would still be the case after Erod last night, although only three of the five were earned. But over the last 12 games coming into last night, the team was 6-6. The starters were 1-6 and had the highest ERA in baseball over those 12 games.
Wow.
I think it was almost 8.5. And so it came down a little bit last night. Obviously, it might not still be the case after 13 games. But yeah, I think we're seeing the sort of stress fractures now. You know, we are Dave Bush is the pitching coach. No one knows because he's been wearing a mask for a year and a half. You know, he came in the beginning of last year as the new pitching coach, and nobody's really seen him. I know him a little bit. We actually have places near each other up in Maine, and I ran some 4-miler with him a couple. It's just he's a great guy. And he and I have spoken a lot about the uncharted waters we're in now, because, you know, generally you look at pitchers and say 15 to 30 innings added to last year's total is where you want to be. Well, everyone has already passed last year's total. I mean, literally every pitcher in baseball has thrown more today than he did all of last year. So that'll, you know, manifest itself in some weird ways. We're going to see guys break down. We're going to see guys lose control. We're going to see dead arm in midseason where we don't always see that. And now you throw this whole mess of the sticky substance stuff into it. And I think, you know, pitching, you know, Garrett Richards was pretty blunt last week when he said, you know, I mean, he didn't throw a curveball. It's the first time in years he didn't throw a single curveball in that start, and said after the game, "Well, this is what you're going to get. I hope you like it. It was a 10-8 game. I hope you like it. This is what you're going to get." And so not to dive in, maybe we will separately, but I do think there's an issue now. Now, Chris Sale threw yesterday. He's going to face hitters for the first time this weekend.
Yes.
Which is huge. Chaim Bloom has said he won't factor Chris Sale into any decisions he does or doesn't make. So that tells me they're going to look for pitching anyway. But, you know, Tanner Houck's been on the sidelines, and he was really good at the beginning of the year and the end of last year. You could drop him in here and give everybody a little bit of a rest. Connor Siebold, who's the other guy they got with Pivetta in the Philly deal last year, he could come up and help this team. So I think they have depth, which they didn't have last year, and I think they're going to need to use it, because some of these guys are going to need to get, I think, the old Hellenic flu, right? They're going to need to be shut down for a mystery ailment that gives them. Now, the All-Star break's coming, so you can get creative with some rest. But these guys need a break, and they need a little propping up, because right now the bullpen is holding them up, and they can't go 5-6 innings every night.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I don't know, maybe they need the old Pedro or Manny. Maybe there's some grandparent they have to visit or something like that where they can get a little rest. You know, that's what they used to do, right?
It's amazing how many grandparents Manny lost the Sunday before the All-Star break when he didn't want to play in the All-Star game. You know, I lost a grandparent. I can't go.
I want to bring in producer Ellen Fleming, because I feel like this is right up her alley. You mentioned the sticky stuff, and let's get into it now because you brought it up. Obviously, it right now is probably the most polarizing issue, not only in pitching, but all of Major League Baseball. The fact that now they're going to crack down on tacky substances. They've gone from in my opinion, TC, total leniency to zero tolerance with the speed of a Jacob deGrom fastball. I mean, it is tough for these guys. We saw what Max Scherzer was like on Tuesday night. It led to an ejection of Phillies manager Joe Girardi because managers can initiate checks as well. So I want to bring Ellen in on this and get her perspective on these guys using the tacky substances or not being able to use the tacky substances.
Okay. I'm going to sound like a huge hypocrite because every time we talk about anything with sports, I'm mostly concerned with the entertainment value behind it. And I know that getting rid of the sticky substances will actually make the game more entertaining. There'll be more hits, more people on base, yada, yada, yada. I don't see the big deal. Like, I think they should be able to use the sticky substances. They have been using it for as long as possible. Some are more obvious than others. Some just put it in their hair and, oh, no, it's just hair gel and it's only 40 degrees out, but I'm sweating like a pig. Like, that's just how it is. I don't get why we just don't let them use it. Like, I get the point of the game.
Yeah.
But what's done is done. And maybe this can be a compromise between pitchers and MLB to move the mound back. So we'll move the mound back, but we will allow sticky substances. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, TC, what do you think? I mean, just quickly for me, you know, I think make it more specific, get rid of the spider tack, but I don't understand why a guy can't use sunscreen and rosin.
Right. And that's exactly it. I don't know if you saw, we had Jonathan Papelbon. He's on the show once a week and he's been great. And he's very much Jonathan Papelbon. You know, and he comes on the show and he knows, you know, we sort of sent him a heads up earlier in the day. Here's what we're going to, you know, the topics. And that was when it was all breaking. So we're going to talk about sticky substances. He comes on with his hair just spiked up and gelled. And, you know, he's doing the whole appearance like this, like he's messing around. He said, listen, I'm going to cheat. Until you catch me, and then I'm going to pay the piper. And, you know, so he was pretty upfront. Here's the thing, and you nailed it, Chris. There's such a wide spectrum of substances, okay? And there's so many places you can go here. Let's begin with the baseball. How in this day and age we cannot create a baseball that has a little tack to it, that shouldn't be that difficult to treat the leather to have some sort of tackiness so you can grip the ball? Because nothing at all, to Ellen's point, is ridiculous. Okay. If you've ever taken a brand new baseball, and I know they rub it with mud, but they don't really do a good job. And that varies from ballpark to ballpark. And rosin is worthless. And so if you take a baseball and try to throw it, it's going to slip out of your hand. And now you're sweating all over yourself in Texas trying to throw that baseball. And now it's slippery. And Buxton of the Twins got hit in the hand. He's going to be out 6-8 weeks last night, you know? And so Scherzer talked about it last night after the game that he almost hit somebody in the head, and he's as, you know, he's got as good control as anybody to throw a baseball in this game. So they need where they messed up. First of all, it was a complete overreaction to the lack of offense. Batting average, run production is at its lowest point since 1968. In 1968, after that season, they lowered the mound to get hitters back into the game. So you're talking about historically low offense. There were three teams at the end of May that were, as a team, hitting under 200, which is insane. Okay, I mean, and there was a no hitter every three nights. I tweeted out once, breaking news: every major league team has at least one hit tonight, you know, because that's where we're at the point that it was news that everybody had a hit. So when they came out with this, they really messed up by not saying, here's something you can use. And what almost everyone agrees to, even hitters, is that there's nothing wrong with a little sunscreen. Now, again, even within the sunscreen world, there's a wide spectrum of what you should and shouldn't be able to use. There's some stuff that is incredibly tacky. And just understand, the really, really sticky stuff, the spider tack, if you put it at the very end of your fingers, the end of your hand, it's almost gluing the ball to your fingers. So, and you can hold up a baseball with two fingers if you've got a spider tack all over it.
Really?
And so when you throw the ball, I don't have it in front of me, but when you snap off the pitch, you are putting a ridiculous amount of spin on it. That's where the spin comes from, right? That it's adhesing, if that's a word, to your fingers until the very last moment of snapping it off. And so you're creating more spin, which can make, and it's not just for breaking balls, it can make the fastball appear to rise. And a fastball doesn't really rise, but a fastball should dip, and it's not dipping. Hunter Renfro explained it to me that, you know, I've been around this game a long time. This is Hunter Renfro saying it. and I know where a pitch is going. I know where that slider is breaking. Doesn't mean I can hit it, but I generally know. He goes, in the last year or two, those pitches are suddenly 5 inches further away or 3 inches further down or staying up. So all of that leads to why they're doing it. It's an overreaction to do it mid-season, in my opinion. I think it would have been better served. Let's gut through the year.
I agree. And
deal with it quietly in the offseason. You had, did you see Sergio Romo last night for the Oakland A's? He was worse than Scherzer.
They
came out to get him, threw his hat and glove, pulled off the belt and threw it on the ground and did the full Steve Lyons where he dropped down to his knees. And we really don't need that.
Yeah, but some of the pitchers are indignant. I mean, with Scherzer, I mean, come on. First of all, one of the issues with Major League Baseball, so we're saying more entertainment, and Ellen's one of those fans who's saying, hey, you know, entertain me. You know, she's in it for the entertainment value, and she's looking at this and saying, okay, I know you're doing this for offense, but I think that that is negated when you're making the game longer when Scherzer gets checked three times in the first four innings. Like, what are we doing?
Crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's just, yeah, and no one wants that.
Yeah.
No one wants that. No one, and the last thing we want is for this game to be even a second longer than it already is. Okay. Listen, you guys, I mean, it's the 11 o'clock news comes on, you do your show, you shut it off, and it's the eighth inning. You can go home and go to bed. I got to wait and do a post-game show. All right. So nobody wants this game to speed up more than me. And I like the guy on second base, not just because it speeds up things, but it makes action. Last night was just a wild 10th and 11th inning. And I know a lot of purists don't like the guy on second base. I think it's great because I've watched a lot of baseball. And I've always said the 10th inning is the most boring inning in baseball prior to this rule because nothing happens. Right, you've got one of your best relievers throwing 100 miles an hour, and you've got three guys coming up swinging for the fences to end it. So you get three strikeouts and a fly ball out, and then you move on to the 11th. Now, you might bunt, you might intentionally walk a guy, you got strategy, but that's a tangent. Back to the sticky stuff.
Yes.
They need to very quickly come up with an approved product that allows pitchers to grip the ball without artificially adding spin or movement. And the guy who invented sticky spider tack is suddenly, you know, a pretty good businessman. He came out a couple of days ago and said, I'll make it. You know, you guys want me to come up with the right product? I'll make it for baseball. Yeah. Just give me a call.
Yeah. It's like, give me the dimensions of what is legal and what's not chemically, right, and I'll make it.
Right. It's not that hard. You know, golf all the time deals with what's a legal driver, what's a legal putter. You know what I mean? There's the technology's there. So come up with something that Major League Baseball provides along with the rosin bag and says, here's what you can use.
I love it. I think it's a great idea. Yeah, the idea that, like the rosin bag, it is provided by MLB. They're in charge of it. They're in charge of the substance and monitoring it and making sure. And I agree with you. You know, just got out this year. Also, I'll say, I saw this the other day, TC. The other thing is, I think they panicked a little bit. Obviously, yes, pitchers have the advantage. And we all know in professional sports, it's a pendulum and it swings back and forth between offense and defense. But in June, strikeouts are down, home runs are up, scoring is up. And you know what? The weather is warmer. The ball is carrying. That happens right every year. So I would have at least waited until the All-Star break so that we have some data with warmer weather before I completely panic. And it's one of the things, you know, when I look at MLB, I don't want to go off on my own tangent here, but I respect and enjoy the fact that they are a lot more, I think, contemporary and responsive to the needs of their customers than they used to be before. Like before with baseball, everything was like, no, we are just going to be completely entrenched in our history and tradition and not make changes. But now, I think, again, speaking of pendulum, it swung too far the other way, where now they're too quick to change. They're too reactive, and there's too much tinkering with the rules. And just to go back to the point that Ellen made, because I think, you know, she's sort of the casual fan, one issue with MLB this year, and I have to tell you because you mentioned it too, I mean, time of game right now is at 3 hours and 9 minutes. That's the average. It's the second longest in the history of baseball. The longest was 2019, 3:10. And so to your point, we don't want to do anything that adds to the game, that makes the game longer.
No, that's absolutely right. And I will say, as a guy who makes his living watching baseball, the pace of play is to me even more important than time of
game. Sure. And their
time of game average is 309 is ridiculous. That should be 245. By the way, and I've said this, Jim Cott, who the great pitcher who lives in Vermont now and who I see quite a bit, and he's as old school as it gets. He said 4 years ago, give or take, that Major League Baseball games should be seven innings. And everyone thought he was nuts.
Yeah.
And you know what? He's right. And it's you want to fix everything. You and Ellen want to get to bed earlier. Let's just shorten the game to seven innings and leave everything else the way it is.
Ellen, that would work for you because they stopped selling beer after the seventh.
Yes, it would in fact work for me. And we need to make sure they don't stop selling at like the fifth if that happens.
Well, see, there you go. See, the unintended consequences. Yeah. Like I mentioned this to my bosses at Nesson one day. We were just having sort of a conversation about how to save baseball, right? Or, you know, how to keep baseball. I don't save baseball, but how to keep baseball.
Commissioner Karen.
Younger.
Commissioner Karen has a ring to it.
Well, just so you know, my seven inning idea was quickly rated. Okay, so the lost advertising revenue comes out of your contract. I mean, so it's not quite as easy as you think to suggest that we just get rid of four commercial breaks. But anyway, I just seven innings make sense to me because you can keep, you don't need a pitch clock. You don't need to bring all these weird rules in if you went to seven innings. They're not going to do that. So that said, there are some simple things you can do, right? The guy on second base, I love in extra innings. Let's speed that up because last night's game was really long. It was over 4 hours, but it was wildly entertaining. I've watched a lot of 2-hour and 45-minute games that were brutal. You know, so, I mean, there's a trade-off. You're not going to have 4:15 every night. The pitch clock, there's no reason it's not there now. They use it in the minor leagues. Nobody complains about it, really. And so there's just no reason that they don't do that. I don't understand why they do that. Other things, I know there's a lot of ideas. I think Theo Epstein is now kind of in charge of coming up with new rule ideas in Major League Baseball. They're doing a lot of them in the minors this year. I don't know if you've heard the I forget what they call it, but there's one that you lose the designated hitter once you pull a pitcher.
Yes.
So there's an incentive to leave your start. Last night, the Rays had an opener and they took him out in the first inning.
Yeah. Andrew Kittredge.
I mean, right. So, I mean, think about, you know, I know there was an NBA game last night. The last 3 minutes took about a half hour.
It did.
And
it
that's
did.
Ridiculous, too. OK,
yeah,
baseball
that was a Scott
is not
Foster
alone
special.
Right. So, Matt, but imagine if the first 3 minutes of that game took a half hour, which is what's happening when you're taking the pitcher out of the first inning. Right. You're right. When you fans are sitting down, grabbing a beer at the ballpark, you want to be entertained and we're going to just take the pitcher out. And here's a 2 minute break. Who comes in, gets a third out, and we have another 2 minute break. That is not how you're going to get casual fans to watch this game.
No, that's a great point. I have to say, TC, you're surprising me a little in that, again, I think your kids are wrong. You are an early adopter. You are on the cutting edge of change because I'm surprised. I would have thought you would be more of a traditionalist and you would be against some of these rules. And I'll be honest with you. I'm relatively young, I think.
Well,
yeah. Ellen says no. But
let's see, it's all so relative.
It's all relative, right? But I don't like the seven inning doubleheaders as much as I complain about time. Like
no.
To me, no, a major league game is nine innings. I mean, that's what it is. And the Madison Bumgarner thing, I know they didn't count it, but I'm also like, we shouldn't even be having the discussion. How many times do you think Nolan Ryan had allowed no hits through seven innings?
Right.
You know, and
right.
So I don't like that. And so the runner on second base, I don't like that one either.
You not like that?
I don't. Here's the thing. I like the runner on base, but I think major league batters and major league hitters are so good that that's making it a little too easy for them. I like to see the guy on first base, put him on first base. And then I've also heard people say change it by inning. So if you play like the 10th and the 11th and nobody scores and then starting in the 12th, the guy's on second. I just think that a lot of times it's so easy for major league hitters to be able to, as much as we talk about guys are swinging for the fences now, they can still play situational baseball. That guy's on second. There are still a lot of guys who can hit the ball to the right side of the infield, move him over, sacrifice fly, the run is in. It's just a little too easy for me for major leaguers.
But see, what I think, and we can debate this obviously all day, but what I think is now you have to play for two runs, right? I mean, the one run is almost a given. Because you're right. They should get that run in. And if you're the visiting team, I think you play for the one run in the top of the inning, meaning the home team is going to try to play for the two runs. I just, like I said, what I love about it is you come into the 10th inning and it happened last night. And right away, if you're engaged in the game, are they going to bunt? Are they going to intentionally walk this guy to set up the force?
Yes.
Are they going to try to steal third to keep that from setting up the intentional force? I just think what still is great about baseball, what baseball hasn't lost, is that I still think it is the best game for casual strategy than any other sport. In other words, as a fan, if you're engaged in the game, you can be thinking about shifts and the outcome and the next move and the next pitch and what he's going to do. Yes. And that's still the beauty of baseball. By the way, I believe in legislating the shift as well. So I'm all in.
Oh, you are all in. I can't believe
I am.
This.
I am. The shift is an easy one because I just think, and again, I'll equate it to other sports because everybody says, how can you do something? They're fundamentally changing it. No, you're not. I mean, a basketball player can't stand in the paint for more than 3 seconds.
No,
there are
right.
all kinds. A hockey player can't stand in front of the net while his teammates go back and get the puck. You have to come out of the zone.
Yeah.
Every sport. I mean, a football player, you know, you're offside if you go over the line.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
there's certain formations, as we well know, that you can and can't set up.
Correct.
You know, every sport, except baseball, sort of legislates where you can and can't be. So there's nothing wrong, in my humble opinion, with having, it's a simple rule, two guys on each side of the bag, and they have to be on the dirt. The infielders have to at least have 1 foot on the dirt. So you can't have a guy in shallow right field. You can't have three guys on the right side of the field. And what that will do will allow hitters to put more balls in play. Getting the shift under control would put more balls in play, create more action, and now we're back to a better pace of play.
So I agree with you 100% on the shift. Ellen likes that idea as well. I'll say, just to go back to my, so here would be my proposal for extra innings. I would put the guy on first, not second. And I think you gain strategy. All the things you talked about. If that guy's on first, are we going to sacrifice bunt? One of the big issues with the game right now, there's not a lot of value put in the stolen base. Now, all of a sudden, guy's on first. Now he might have to steal to get into scoring position. Now we can have a guy in scoring position with nobody out, but we have to earn it. And I guess that's really my ultimate point. I just want them to have to earn that guy being in scoring position. I'm okay with them starting out with somebody on base. I don't like the idea that the guy's already in scoring position. I want to see them earn that, and I want to see all that strategy that goes with trying to earn that.
I could live with that, especially if you are maybe after two innings adding the guy to second. And I know Alex Cora believes that. Now, you're first, then first and second. And he said, you have to keep going. He'd load him up by the 14th inning because he wants to go home too. Because, you know, I mean, forgetting the entertainment part of it from the pure baseball part of it, you're blowing out staffs. I mean, what always amazes me, if you have one of these 17 inning games, and you know, they happen, they don't happen as much now because guys are on base, right? But we used to have these, you know, once a week, somebody somewhere was going to play some ridiculously long game. And the next day, one or two relief pitchers would get sent down to the minors only because they need fresh arms to continue. And you're literally talking about guys' careers now being affected, not because they did or didn't perform, but because they pitched in a 17 inning game last night and they need to call someone up for reinforcements.
So I want to go back to the Red Sox a little bit. I have thoroughly enjoyed Commissioner Caron's treatise on baseball, but I want to go back to the Red Sox a little bit.
Also, post-game shows should only be a half hour, but that's really...
Well, yeah, but now you're running into that same commercial issue that you mentioned with the seven-inning game.
Yeah.
You're taking money out of your own pocket, TC.
That's a good point. They should be 2 hours since I left.
Wander Franco, tremendous debut last night. I know not ideal if you're a Red Sox fan, but just as a fan of baseball, you have to be excited to see the number one prospect in all of baseball make his debut, does it against the Red Sox, 2-for-4, hit a 3-run homer off of Eduardo Rodriguez. That brings me to this. When do you think we see the Red Sox number one prospect, Jarren Duran, who really has showed some great power and great potential at AAA?
And I asked that very question of Chaim Bloom last night because it was the perfect time. He was involved in signing Juan DeFranco when he was still with the Rays front office back in 2017. And he certainly knows that the Rays are not a team, an organization that rushes guys up. And at 20 years old, a 2001 birth date, the first 2001 born player in Major League Baseball.
Man,
you want to feel old? We can all agree on that. We all feel old.
Does that make you feel old, Ellen?
That makes me feel very old.
Yes.
Very old.
Yes. This has already been a successful podcast, TC. Thank you.
Welcome to my universe. To answer your question, I think we'll see him soon. I think we'll see him in the next month. I wouldn't be surprised. You know, the West Coast trip coming up. I seem to recall, and I have no hard evidence of this, but it feels like we've seen young guys called up while they're on the West Coast in the past. And I have absolutely no evidence.
Didn't that happen with Bogey? Didn't Bogey debut in San Francisco?
I think he did. They were Colorado and then San Francisco. Very good.
Yeah.
I think the trip was Colorado and San Francisco. Dustin Pedroia got hurt on that trip. And I believe either Benintendi or Devers. I think one of them was on a road trip anyway. Well, you know, a road trip is always a good time to call a guy up. You're all together in the hotel. You're all together on the team bus. There's nothing else to do but go to the ballpark early and be with the coaches. You're not trying to find a place. You're not settling in locally. So, again, nobody has told me this, but after New York this weekend, Kansas City at Fenway next week through Thursday, then they go to Oakland and Seattle. That might not be the worst time to bring a guy in. The other option would be right after the All-Star break, not immediately. They've got the Yankees for four. I don't think you'd want to throw a young guy into a Red Sox-Yankees series to start.
They did that with Mookie Betts, though.
Yeah, they did. They did. And you know what? I mean, you know, sometimes this is all dictated by need. You know, somebody goes down, then he's going to have to come up. We saw Connor Wong made his debut last night. I don't think he's necessarily ready, but he's a catcher and he's available. And so they bring him up. So I do think, you know, I would think by the end of July, the absolute certainty. But I would think in the next few weeks, you're probably just about at the right time to bring him up.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I mean, they're in the lower half of MLB and OPS in both left field and center field. They could definitely use a boost there, whether it's internal or external, which leads me to this, TC. We've talked about, I think, mostly internal solutions. Chris Sale, which is very exciting. It seems like he's maybe ahead of schedule. Jaron Duran, I think, could help this team a lot. But what do you think Chaim Bloom does at the trade deadline, which is sneaking up on us? It's July 30th. You know, I think that my opinion has been that Chaim has a longer term view, that this 2021 team was really just supposed to be about respectability, while Chaim constructed the real next great Red Sox team, to borrow a term from Ben Cherington, behind the scenes. But now he finds himself with a team that I think can play in October with a few reinforcements. How aggressive do you think he'll be?
Yeah, probably not overly aggressive. Certainly not Dave Dombrowski level aggressive, because I don't think, first of all, I don't think many people are Dave Dombrowski level aggressive. But he's not going to go all in on this team. And that's not meant to be an insult. I think he'll add to this team. I've talked to him enough that I do believe he appreciates the fact that these opportunities don't come along every year. And listen, that's as much that they have gotten off to a surprising good start as it is that maybe the competition isn't as good as you thought. You know, I certainly thought the Yankees were the team to beat in the American League, and they've got real issues. I mean, they're a bit of a mess. I still think they'll be around at the end. Tampa Bay's a very good team, but they're over the 7-game losing streak. They're hitting under 200 as a team. It's an offense you can pitch to. And so I do think he wants to take advantage of this. I think the idea of even being a wild card team, if you made a wild card game and you had a healthy Chris Sale to start that wild card game, you know, you could do something in the postseason, get a little momentum going. So I think he will look to add relief help. I think every playoff, you know, contender will, but certainly they could use another reliever. I think they could use a starter. Here's what I think you look for in a Chaim Bloom deal. And I think Adam Ottavino is the perfect deal to illustrate what I think he will try to do in July. Adam Ottavino helped them now. He's become their eighth inning guy. They needed somebody like that to prop up the bullpen, but they did it as a salary dump on the Yankee side, which also got them Frank German, who is a very good young pitching prospect. So that's a deal that they got future help rebuilding the pipeline, which is very important to him, while taking maybe an overpriced guy to help you immediately. Those deals are usually there. I don't think you're going to see a deal where he's giving up three prospects to get a stud who's a rental guy. But I do think, you know, they can find, they've got a little bit of wiggle room. They could probably move a guy to create a little more wiggle room and then accept a bigger salary on someone while getting a couple of prospects along with them that they like.
Yeah, I mean, my wish list would be probably left-handed hitting first baseman and a starting pitcher. You know, I think, and maybe a younger starting pitcher. I look at a team like Colorado. They have some guys. John Gray could be available. That's a pitcher I've always liked. Throws with good velocity. Yeah. Maybe if you get him out of Coors, Marquez out there as well. Maybe there will be some guys available. Now, you mentioned the Yankees there. They've been struggling and scuffling. Aaron Boone has kind of lost his mind at times. He keeps getting booted from games. It's really interesting to me because I was looking at this. I believe I'm correct on this. You know, this will be this weekend the first time the Yankees come to Fenway this year. Is that right?
It is. They've only played, you know, I was looking up last night. So they're 7-0 against the Yankees and Rays,
which is amazing.
Which is crazy.
Because last year they were 4-16 against those teams.
4-16, and I think 12-29, or my math isn't quite right, but, or is it? I don't know. It's something like that. The year before, 14-29, whatever the number comes out to. And so the last 2 years, they have been woeful against those two teams, and they're 7-0 against them. But as soon as I wrote that down, it dawned on me that that means there are 31 more games against the Yankees and Rays, which is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, you got about 100 and, no, what do you got? 90 games left, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
So a third of your remaining season is against the Yankees and Rays, the two teams you're playing. One out of three games is against one of those two teams. It's crazy. So, yeah, it's going to be the first time here. We didn't get them till, what was that, 2 weeks ago in New York, 3 weeks ago for the first time. And that was a huge sweep. And now they come here this weekend, which is going to be great. You know, it works out well. I do wonder, you know, they tell you in every sport that the schedule, you know, it's purely random and it's all, but, you know, it makes a lot of sense for these games to be held as attendance, you know, allocations were going up at both ballparks.
So maybe that's
maybe
why
Major League said,
back.
Why waste Red Sox Yankees in an empty ballpark in April when we could have a full house in July? But it is crazy that they have all those games remaining against one another.
I think you just nailed it there with the idea of attendance. That makes a lot of sense. And then just the last one for you here, TC, I find this interesting because I know you grew up a Red Sox fan, as I did as well. And one of the things, one of the key tenets of being a Red Sox fan is always sort of like, well, you know, Fenway Park, you know, the Red Sox are built for Fenway Park. Well, the Red Sox have the best road record in baseball, and offensively, their OPS is higher on the road. They've hit 53 home runs in their first 36 road games. They have 39 home runs in 37 home games. They've been a better hitting team on the road. Are we wrong? Is Fenway no longer a hitter's park, or is it just that this team has just been that good on the road?
Yeah, I'm worried this team is just not that good at home. And Jim Rice and I have talked about it on the show, and he thinks there are some guys who kind of come out of their approach at Fenway Park. And we've seen a lot of guys do that. You know, the wall is right there. And this team is really built on going up the middle, going opposite field, right? It's kind of an old school offensive approach. Talk to Tim Hyers, and they really stress that, you know, that be a gap to gap hitting team. They don't stress launch angle. They don't, I mean, again, every guy is individual, and you know, JD Martinez has his absolute own theories on hitting that have worked really well for him. But by and large, and I don't, you know, have the numbers for individual breakdown home and road, but I just feel like somebody like Marwin Gonzalez, somebody like Bobby Dalbec, their swing seems to get a little bigger at Fenway Park. You know, that again, that wall is right there. And so I worry about that. Now, it's been better over the last two homestands. And again, not looking at it, but I know that that they were, you know, below 500 coming back to Fenway two homestands ago. And they've won some series at home. So I think, what are they, three or four games above 500 at Fenway Park now? And
20
it's amazing.
17 as we have this discussion.
And I think I haven't looked at it comparatively, but last homestand, I looked at it, and that was actually the best home record in the division, which is crazy. So nobody's playing well at home. And I don't really know what the answer to that is. Maybe, you know, I think we're going to look back at all of this, the post-pandemic stuff, and try to figure out how some of that affected some things. Last year, I know Mitch Moreland told me last year, the biggest effect of all of it last year is that they weren't in the clubhouse at Fenway. They had to go up to those individual suites, remember? And if you remember, relatively early in the season, he hit a walk-off home run on a Saturday, and he said that was the most depressing moment of the season for him because he hit a walk-off home run. They couldn't really gather at home plate, and then they all went to separate suites to shower and go home. And he said it was the most anticlimactic, exciting moment I'd ever been a part of. So we're here now, and I don't know, is there still some residue of that?
It's interesting. We'll see. Hopefully they can play better at home, because not only will that benefit them in the standings, but I think it just increases the interest in the team. And really, with the Celtics and Bruins out of the playoffs, the Patriots quarterback situation uncertain, the Red Sox right now are center stage on the Boston sports scene, and you want to see them capitalize on that. All right. That was the one and only Tom Caron of NESN. You can find him on Twitter at Tom Caron. He tweets a lot of great baseball stuff, not just the Red Sox. I know that we say, you know, obviously Joe Castiglione, who we've had on this podcast, and Dave O'Brien, those are the voices of the Red Sox. But I think Tom Caron is also the voice of the Red Sox. He's been coming into your living room for a long time. So, TC, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, and I'm glad we could all come to a communal feeling old moment together. So thank you, Ellen. Thank you, Chris. And thanks for having me on. It was fun.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Take 5 podcast. We appreciate it, as always. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the podcast so others can find it and enjoy it. And now you can email us at take5@wcvb.com. We'd love to get your feedback and hear your thoughts. We'll catch you next time.